to hour number two on this Thursday edition of the Hagmann Report. Stephen Mencking just joined us, and it was a great hour. We covered a lot of ground, from current events to spiritual matters to the economy, the stock market, and cryptocurrencies. And I just wanted to add, I didn't get a chance to say this while Stephen was on, but the reason I asked him those questions there at the end about how it works is I think a lot of people don't get into this stuff because they are unsure of how secure it is, unsure of the digital nature of it, and how to even get involved to begin with without, you know, getting ripped off. And I think learning more about that will be interesting, because the numbers that he talked about, you know, less than 1% of the economy, and we've seen how much the value has increased in some of these cryptocurrencies. If more people did start to use it, the potential for the increases in value are there. And it's very interesting to see, these markets kind of created out of thin air. Joking with Eric off camera, I remember when Bitcoin was just, when it first came out as an idea, and you could get them basically for pennies on the dollar, and now it's over $5,000 per Bitcoin. Something definitely to keep your eye on. We're going to be joined by Tracy Diaz, also known as Tracy Beans, B-E-A-N-Z, on YouTube and Twitter, and we're going to be covering a lot of ground with her when she comes on in just a few moments. We have interesting news. As again, when Stephen was on, I mentioned the story. It's up on Drudge finally, an update from the interview from Jose Campos yesterday, Jesus Campos. Apparently, the Mandalay Bay hotel owner insisted that he only do his interview on Ellen, saying that because she would not press him on the official timeline change of the shooting, and because out of fear that he would not stick to the story for some reason, it was MGM's decision behind the scenes to call off all the other interviews, and they did a deal with Ellen, knowing she would not play hardball on the timeline as long as she had the exclusive, a TV insider told the Daily Mail. And it is an interesting piece of information, as everybody is, you know, keeping this close to the vest. We're not getting any real information, not even being able to ask any real questions. And it is how this whole investigation has gone. I'm gonna jump in here. All right.
Thanks for covering for me. I've just been in the office taking care of some business. A tremendous interview with Steve Mencking. A tremendous interview. I thought that was a lot of great information. And now it's our distinct honor and pleasure to bring on Tracy Beans, an internet, really an internet star of the internet, and a truth seeker, a warrior for truth, I must say. And many of you in our audience know her by her YouTube channel and other venues or social media networking, of course. So it's with our distinct honor to bring her on. Tracy, how are you?
Hi, guys. I'm so honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, definitely the honor is all of ours, and we really appreciate the time you're taking away and joining us. Tracy, for those who don't know you, if you don't mind, give people out there a little bit, kind of an introduction about yourself, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. I actually started in activism back in 2001 after 9/11, and that kind of like shook me awake. And I did a lot of 9/11 truth activism, and then I started working on the campaign for Ron Paul for president in 2008, and then a lot more in depth in 2012. Organized a ton of events, organized Paul Festival down in Florida right before the convention in 2012. Got to meet some amazing people, kind of built up a great group in the Liberty Movement. And then when Trump decided to run for the presidency, I recognized immediately, like so many other people did, that this was a really good opportunity to begin to educate folks who had just kind of been shooken awake on what it is that's been going on for all this time while they were kind of in their slumber. And I started doing that by kind of delving into the WikiLeaks emails, the Podesta emails, and I worked on a couple of grassroots campaigns for Donald Trump. And, you know, just got to know some amazing people that just didn't, you know, didn't really get it before what we were up against and kind of were, you know, woken from their slumber because of the presidency and the run for the presidency of Donald Trump. So that's a little short history of how I started.
Fantastic. All right. So you've been going full steam ahead ever since, exposing the fallacies out there and, of course, fighting for the truth, fighting for the exposure of the truth. We've got so much to talk about. So many things going on in the present day, and, of course, you cover quite a bit. You're very well versed in everything that's taking place. Let me ask you, what do you think, in looking at the geopolitical landscape today, what do you think is the most important or the most pressing issue of the day, if there's any one thing, or is it the totality of events, or what's gotten your interest right now? And I guess we could work backwards from there.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I think what's the most striking about everything that's going on right now is how interconnected everything is, even if it doesn't seem so at first. Like, we've got standalone issues that then, you know, intertwine themselves together as events unfold. So every scandal or every sort of deep state expose or every sort of backroom dealing that has gone on with, you know, the players and the powers that be and things like that, they're all interwoven and connected and basically are being ripped out into the open in real time in front of us, sometimes at such a rapid pace that it's really difficult to catch up and to keep up for most people. I mean, I'm sure you find that even trying to cover these issues. So I think the most important thing right now for us is to kind of weed out this corruption that we're dealing with. It's not just Clinton, you know, we know that, but I think that would be a really good first step, is getting, you know, accountability for some of these crimes that have happened over decades now. So
exactly, and it almost seems like to me, and I don't know if you feel this way, and I've talked with some people who do feel this way, it almost seems like we're living in a kind of a third world environment where there's really no justice out there, or at least no justice for those people like Hillary Clinton and others, Comey, if you want to throw him in there. But it seems like there's this this lack of justice for the elite and powerful. There's a protected class, and that certainly takes the wind out of many people's sails, and it kind of denotes that we're a banana republic almost, and I think people are getting a little bit fed up with this two-tier justice system, or this lack of justice against the elites and the powerful.
It is frustrating. It's immensely frustrating. I mean, you watch some of these, you know, House hearings and Senate hearings, and you see, you know, a lot of the stuff that goes on is lip service. It's not, you know, it's people saying the right thing, but you know their heart's not in it, and you know that if we focus on the issue they're talking about, then they're involved in it somehow, and they'll come down. So, you know, letters are written, and people make testimony, and they look great, but nothing's ever done about it, and people are getting so frustrated. I totally agree with you. I think we're gonna get to the point, and I always try to stress to people, like, it's almost impossible to fathom this at this point, but we're kind of the boss. The last I checked, I mean, we're the ones who kind of are their boss, not the other way around. I think more people need to realize that that's the way it works. We're not in a sort of, like you said, banana republic / royal sort of king and queen, you know, Game of Thrones scenario where the king rules over the people and we're just supposed to kneel down and take it. That's not how this works in this republic that we live in. So it's happening. I mean, I see such a massive change in people from when I first started doing what I do to now. Even weekly, you see more and more people starting to get more active, to understand, to do their own research, to speak out, to start their own YouTube channel. You know, there's only so much you can do that before it's like, okay, well, what now? But I feel like getting people together is the first step, and I feel like we're halfway there at this point.
Okay. I mean, do you see, so you've been in this for a while, as you pointed out, from the 9/11 truth movement back to working to try to get Ron Paul in 2008. And I do remember those movements. There seemed to be a lot more enthusiasm out there for getting the truth out, but that was also mainly focused around 9/11. So do you believe that as these events continue to unfold, and as the people are able to see through the deception of the mainstream media, that the alternative media and the search for the truth are going to continue to become popular, even more popular than they have been in years past?
Yes, and you know, the prime example of that is 9/11. You know, when we were out demanding justice for the victims of 9/11, we were criticized for not respecting the victims of 9/11. It was almost like a "how dare you even suggest such a thing could be possible." You say the word deep state and people would basically throw tinfoil at you. You know, it was a much different environment with, especially with this Vegas issue. You're seeing the country collectively sort of say, hold on a second. You know, this isn't right. I mean, everyday folks that were thrust into the middle of this, for example, you know, I interviewed Renee Downs. We did about an hour-long interview, and she's an amazing person.
Yeah, I saw that, by the way. And I really would like you to get into that, because I thought that was an amazing... You did an amazing job. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to make sure that... and folks, go to Tracy Beans on YouTube. In fact, we'll link it in the program description. This will be a standalone segment in our video file. So go to that and watch that interview. So go ahead. Let's talk about Las Vegas and specifically that particular interview, and we can go from there.
Great. Yeah. So I reached out to Renee. I just reached out to her on Facebook because I saw the videos she did. And I think it's really important to point out that the videos that she did, she wasn't making those videos at the time from the perspective of, look, the mainstream media is not covering this. She was making those videos at the time to warn other folks who may be watching or in the area that there was something dangerous going on and that they needed to get themselves to a place that, where they could be safe, which is telling. So this kind of, for Renee, and I don't want to necessarily speak for her, but for Renee, this kind of, you know, blew up to something that she wasn't necessarily expecting. So Renee Downs was one of the first people to come out and say that there were gunshots in other locations. She didn't ever say that there were multiple shooters. She did not see another shooter. However, she was at the Bellagio. She had a bunch of friends that were at the concert. And she was supposed to meet up with them at the Bellagio for drinks, and they were going ziplining. So she gets a call. I'm sorry. She's trying to make a call to them. They're not picking up the phone. They're not hearing their texts. And now this is like almost 10 to 11. Nobody inside the Bellagio at this point even knows that there was an attack at Mandalay Bay. It's almost like, you know, you're in Vegas, there's the clink of the machines, no one was paying attention, no one knew. She was sitting at the bar, she decides to have a drink with her husband, who's actually a 20-year combat veteran. And all of a sudden, a flood of people run through the front doors, and she hears gunshots, and her husband hears gunshots, and jumps on top of her to shield her from whatever gunfire may be coming in. So there have been people that have said, well, she doesn't really know what gunshots sound like, so she could be mistaken. But for her husband to cover her, a combat veteran, someone who's been in war, in active duty, to understand what he was hearing and to jump into protective mode is telling. Basically, from there, they just kind of fled. Everybody threw everything all over the place, like glass was broken everywhere, and... Long story short, the next day, 6 in the morning, she comes out to check out, and she says to the front desk staff, like, you know, I only spent about an hour in my room yesterday. are you guys doing anything for us that, you know, guests that didn't really spend any time due to the gunfire last night? The front desk clerk says, hold on a second, and goes and gets the manager. The manager comes over and says, how can I help you? And Renee says, you know, I'm just wondering if you're doing anything in terms of a discount for folks who didn't get to spend very much time in their room because of the gunfire. And the hotel clerk, the manager, I mean, looks at her like dead in the eyes and says, there was no shooting at the Bellagio Hotel last night. And she's like, almost like the Truman Show. You know what I mean? Like everything was fake.
Sure.
She had no idea. She was blown away by the fact that this woman was trying to convince her that what she had experienced the night before was something that didn't happen. And so she pushed the issue. She's like, really? Well, I have all this stuff on my phone. I have videos. The woman says, hold on a second, walks away, comes back, slides her receipt across the table and says, have a nice day. And they comped her entire visit there. And actually said, you know, Renee says that she calls that the hush comp, almost to shut her up and stop her from talking about what she'd experienced.
That happened. As I understand it, that happened between 45 minutes to an hour after the. I mean, you said what, 10:30 local time.
No, the gunshot, she said, happened somewhere between 11 and 11:15 p.m.
Okay, so a good hour, perhaps 75 minutes after the shooting from the Mandalay Bay.
Yeah, yes. And that she didn't even know until they'd finally gotten upstairs to their room and turned on the television to see what the media was covering in terms of the Bellagio, that there had even been an incident at Mandalay Bay.
Okay.
So she turns it on, she sees all this, and she's like, oh my gosh. So that in and of itself, and there have been several other people who have come forward. There's a really compelling video from a woman who was at Planet Hollywood. There's several other people that have approached me wanting to kind of get their story out there. Everybody is petrified. You know, people are like, well, why aren't more people speaking out? People are scared to speak out. That's why.
Okay. Now, with respect to the interview you did with this woman, she recorded, as I recall, she recorded walking down the hallway. Is that correct? I mean that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. But I didn't see. Now, I did not see any evidence of destruction or gunshots or the debris from gunshots. Did I miss something or?
No, it was okay. In the lobby, and this is one of the things that, you know, she's kind of like, ah, oh, because it happened in the lobby.
All right.
And she went downstairs, they were cleaning up and replacing things before they were let out of lockdown. Like, they were already cleaning up, replacing windows and replacing whatever broke. The cleaning crews were there doing it while they were in lockdown. You could see them, she said, like, through the glass, fixing everything. And the next morning, she said, you could eat off the floor. You'd never know that something had happened there. And so a lot of people are saying, you know, well, that was all the crowd running from Mandalay Bay. Well, Mandalay Bay is almost two miles away from the Bellagio Hotel. So it definitely wasn't an echo. It definitely wasn't people running from Mandalay Bay down the street, down the strip to get into the Bellagio. I don't know what it was. She did not see a gunman. It's, you know, we have to make that clear. But obviously there was some sort of a massive event that happened at the Bellagio and other hotels as well.
All right. And Joe, I mean, you've seen reports from other places as well.
Just the audio recording on the police scanners detail of at least five other hotels that had reports of gunfire. And one of the interesting ones was the Tropicana, where it was reported that medics were taking fire. And even some of the reports came in after the shooting at the Mandalay Bay stopped. And the only answers you get on the scanner was that they were diversions. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know. Interesting, we got an email from a listener, just as we're talking here, from an article from True News. And this is exclusive. Many people have seen a video of armed security personnel walking through a casino and people putting their hands up. It's now being reported by True News that that was the FBI seizing the Tropicana casino video during the Las Vegas massacre. And that's a real interesting piece of news. And who took the video and when it was taken has now come out. And they're reporting, according to a senior law enforcement official involved in the investigation, a seven-man team of law enforcement officials from the FBI to the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department secured video footage being captured from the Tropicana south-facing external surveillance cameras, which were recording an unparalleled high-definition view of the massacre from beginning to end. And it's an interesting explanation as to that video that was shot in another casino showing armed personnel walking through there. So okay. There's so many questions. Right. I mean, this whole thing has been buried, and it's been covered up in layers of crap to where we are now so far removed from reports of other shootings and or shooters. People are just wanting to get the information about the shooter that they did identify and the motive behind that. But it almost seems like everybody or a lot of people have forgotten those initial reports.
Right. Well, Tracy, walk us through, if you don't mind, walk us through what you do know and then what you suspect might have happened if you want to enter into the realm of speculation, reasoned speculation based on your investigative findings. And start wherever, because this is just, to me, we're 18 days out now from this, and we really have no answers.
We don't, and I always like to warn when I'm speculating first, because I feel it's important to make the distinction,
sure.
And you know, this, a lot of this will be, and I'll let you know when that happens. But the thing, I think, you know, I think I'm part of your audience, so I know that mostly everyone inside your audience knows what's going on and kind of has done some cursory research into what's happened. So I think the thing that was most telling to me and most kind of striking to me were, and Doug, I'd love your perspective on this, the leaked photos.
Right.
From the crime scene, right? How often do you see something like that happen?
You mean
in a major crime like that, that photos like of that nature are leaked to the public?
Oh, not too often, and especially in a situation of this magnitude. There's two different sides to this, however. One would be the chaos, which would somewhat permit, to me, well, how can I put this? The photos that were leaked, the ones that I saw, did not appear to be police crime photos, at least of the interior of the room where there was the body. I'll just stick with the body itself. It did not appear to be a police crime scene photograph to me. All right.
Is that because there were like no markings?
Correct.
You know.
Correct. I mean, well, that's one thing. Yes, that's one aspect of it. Now, it could very well have been a preliminary before CSI got there, before the police photographer got there. Perhaps a police officer did take that photograph informally, you know. But it just didn't seem like an official crime scene photograph that I've seen before. You know, again, absent of markings, absent of evidence markers, and measurements and stuff like that. However, let's say it was. Leaking photos like that would get you fired. I mean, certainly would get you fired or disciplined, regardless if you were on the inside doing that. And most of the time, it's a pretty close circle of people within that area, especially at the very beginning. So there's not a great big pool of suspects as to who would have leaked that. You know, you might have at most a dozen people, a dozen possible so-called police suspects who would leak that photograph or those photographs.
I want to focus there for a second, because this is how my mind is going and working with this piece. I feel is very key. Now, this is earlier on in the investigation, just a few days after. The sheriff is obviously under duress of some kind, whether it's stress, whether he's nervous, whether he's upset, whether he hasn't gotten sleep. I mean, it's to me, speculating, of course, it seems like he's being kind of pressured and or threatened. I mean, you've heard the tape of the FBI sort of handler, the Vegas FBI agent in charge from Vegas, kind of like handling the sheriff, whispering, don't go there, don't say that, don't do this. You know, it's got to be a lot of stress for that guy. And personally, I feel like from, you know, just judging body language, judging the way he spoke, he seems like a pretty honest guy that's stuck in a really, really crappy situation. Excuse my French. And so that being said, that was when it was almost like the press conferences were more of hinting things at us that we should pay attention to than straight press conferences. He would, you know, drop words like extremist and radical and, you know, kind of lead people to do their own thinking. There's a lot of theories floating around out there on what happened. One of them is it was a CIA gun operation, gun running operation gone wrong, or some sort of government operation that didn't go the right way. And so with that sort of theory in mind, one of the things that I thought of instantaneously was, well, somebody wanted us to see those pictures. Somebody wanted us to see those pictures, or somebody wanted someone else to see those pictures.
I'll go with and that. Yep.
So if the gentleman that was killed in that room, who I have major questions on who that was, if the gentleman killed in that room was indeed an important person in an operation and he was killed, one good way to show the other side, so to speak, who that gentleman was would be to leak photos of him laying there dead in the room without having to say, look, we got your gun. I mean, there's proof, right? It does not look to me to, it doesn't, this is really hard because I like to call myself a journalist who uses factual information and researched information. It's 99% of what I do. But in a case like this, we're forced to speculate to some degree. So
yep.
I feel like examining the photos publicly available of the ghost Paddock, who does not exist on the internet outside of a few things, and a deposition that CNN released that doesn't really tell us anything. We have a couple photos of him, all of which have a Paddock with attached earlobes. The photo of the gentleman who passed in that room does not have attached earlobes. Earlobes are like, ears are a fingerprint. They're an identifier that is unique to each person. And, you know, I don't know what you guys think about that theory, but I don't know that I can't confidently say that was definitely Stephen Paddock who passed away in that room.
No, I agree with you 100% on that.
I don't think anybody can.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know. Honestly, whoops.
Yeah, and what's weird is from the interview with the security guard to all these hotel personnel and other guests, nobody's asked about this man. Nobody's asked about their interactions with this man. Apparently, he was a regular in Vegas. Even Steve Wynn, the casino guy, knew who he was and was familiar with him, even commented on him. So we have that, you know, this guy who spent tons of money, who the casino owners knew, yet we have nobody asking any questions, and we have Steve Wynn offering some information that wasn't even made public by the police. Like, he was able to use service elevators. He made the comment, well, if he was in my hotel, he would never be able to have access to the service elevators. So it does seem like Paddock, or the person who is identified as Paddock, is some kind of government operative in some capacity, and that's why we see a lack of information.
Yeah. This does smack of, to me anyway, Paddock himself smacks as an operator in a proprietary operation.
Right, we joke that Clancy's novels aren't even this creative.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I think this is a case of one of those, everybody always says, like the anti-conspiracy theorists say, you know, you could never get all those people to keep quiet. I think this is one instance where it was too big for them to even control because it wasn't supposed to happen. I don't necessarily feel like this was a planned out false flag. It's too all over the place. They can't be that careless. Like, there are too many loose ends. You've got, like you said, Joe, Steve Wynn accidentally volunteering information on a live interview.
Exactly.
They can't wrap their arms around this Now I did it.
It's catchy. I love live radio and TV, folks. In case you just, you know, I smacked my mic.
At least once a week, he knocks the magnets off his microphone.
Oh, yeah, I tear everything off.
And then you got Eric, who always sits his head on this one light that you guys don't see every time he comes over here to turn the screens on. So it's funny to see things like that.
I'm a massive plus. Anyone who knows me will tell you that I'm a massive plus. That's not out of the ordinary for me.
Did you knock your mic? Because if you can just adjust it where it's a little low. The volume's a little low.
How's that? Better?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Sorry about that. I did. Right. I knocked it right down. Okay. So they can't get their arms around this to control the narrative, and they've inadvertently red-pilled the entire country. Nobody believes this story. Nobody. This Ellen interview was almost an insult to people, honestly. You know, people that never imagined that something like this could ever be possible are like, oh my gosh, everything I ever knew is now not true anymore. So great. Come on board. We're here with open arms. Come to us. We're here for you. That's the way I look at it anyway.
Man, indeed. And it's so good to see. One thing I'm encouraged is there are people are using their investigative skills, critical thinking skills out there, the citizen journalists, and they're beginning to really make, to me, I think they're making a difference. And they're actually, well, Laura Loomer, for example, regardless of what you think of her, like her, don't like her, it doesn't matter. Her presence really caused the Lombardo to fess up to a different timeline, I suppose, depending on how you want to say that. But
think about that. Yeah. That's crazy. I mean, that would never have happened in the past, ever. You know, not only that, but they had to stop letting independent journalists into press conferences because we ask questions. We ask questions that everybody else wants the answers to. So they can't even control like, they have to stop doing pressers now because of, you know, people who are in, you know, intriguing minds, inquiring minds want to know what's really going on here. Laura's doing a fantastic job. She really is.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she's asking the right questions, and
so much so they banned her from a few of the press conferences.
And I saw some, and I'm not sure who it was or even, I don't know if there was any cause for this, but I saw somebody was banned from the MGM for life for asking questions. Did you see that, Tracy?
I did. It was I forget his name, but he basically filmed in all different locations within the hotel of Mandalay Bay, and he said, you know, there's nothing here that's stopping anyone from using the service elevator. There's no security. There's no cab. You know, he went through, and they basically apparently wrote a no trespass letter that he can't go on all these properties forever. He's banned for life.
Yeah.
And they have a gag order. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you guys saw, but just today, later this afternoon, they released a story that one of the victims of the shooting has actually sued and was successful. There's a restraining order that's it prohibits the Live Nation, who ran the concert, MGM Grand, the people that made the bump stocks, from getting rid of any employee records, evidence, video, deleting anything. They have to, they're not allowed to do it anymore. So,
well,
that's big.
This is going to be lawsuit central. I understand to a degree that lawsuits are going to be flying everywhere. So there's the MGM properties, Mandalay Bay, and I would say a level of due diligence on their part is, I suppose, acceptable. But what I don't find acceptable is civil servants, whether it's the Sheriff's Department or the FBI, not telling the American people, not providing them valid critical updates of really important information.
Look, and you're right. And it's not like the guy's on the loose and they don't know where he is. He's dead. Right? So there's no... From their perspective, from their storyline, what are they keeping from us? Why? I mean, like, why not just tell us what happened? The dude is dead now. So, if it's not a terrorist incident, if there's no other accomplices, if he was a lone gunman, if he acted alone, he was just a nutcase that went crazy, why aren't you sharing, you know, legitimate and honest details with the American people about the worst mass shooting in the country's history.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense.
One question I had, and you said something that really kind of rings true to me, something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing now, that maybe this wasn't supposed to happen, at least not the way it unfolded. And I'm kind of leaning that way myself, that this was just, I don't even know how to explain that further except to say that it would speak to motive or lack thereof. And I realize some people are just bat crap crazy, okay, that, you know. However, something doesn't feel right about this.
And there's also the theory that it could have been much worse, or that there was other things planned.
Yeah, why did he
never
stop
happened?
Shooting?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
latest is that he accidentally shot himself. Throw stuff out there to see what sticks, but no, I don't.
I'm just saying, there was the police that went on and did that talk show. I forget which. Dateline or something. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They said, one of the officers said, I didn't see a head wound. I saw a gunshot wound to the chest. If you look back in history, there are very, very, very few, and I don't know the exact number, maybe one or two that are publicized, reports of people attempting to commit suicide by shooting themselves in the chest.
Right.
One of them was an athlete who didn't want to shoot himself in the chest. He had such a severe case of PTSD. He wanted his brain to be viable. Thank you, John. The other one was a long, long time ago, and I don't remember the circumstances, but it's not a common way to kill yourself.
It's certainly not a reliable way, and in my forensic experience, I've seen a lot of crime scene photographs. The majority of people do go for the headshot. Got to tell you that.
And I'm not sure, but one of the later videos to come out of the shooting was from a bus stop where there was a number of people huddled at a bus stop, and we might have identified the last two audible shots that were about 10 seconds apart, about 40 seconds after the last rounds of machine gun. Remember, we listened to that video last week.
Yeah, okay.
But
a good friend of mine actually spent countless hours. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name of the channel.
Sure.
It's Blackpilled on YouTube.
Okay.
He's amazing, and he spent hours and hours, and he basically took all the available video and audio of the event, and he laid them out on top of one another in a timeline. So all of the different videos, he took them and he put them all together, and you can play it start to finish and see the event from all those different perspectives with the police audio overlaid, I believe.
Interesting. Okay.
I saw that. It's like the compilation of, it's titled, it has the word a compilation of Las Vegas shootings, I think. Okay. Was one of them. I'm not sure if that's the one you're referring to. But I have seen a few out there.
Blackpilled, you said?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Yeah, I think we've seen just about every video and mm-hmm. every open source piece of information out there, including the forensic, the acoustic analysis too, that would suggest more than one shooter. And I'm leaning toward that. Look, this is all speculation on my part too. I'm leaning toward more than one shooter. I'm leaning toward this being having components of ISIS as well as the anarchist aspect. I mean, I'm not. Be careful with folks. I'm saying this very, very carefully. Okay, I'm not saying that there was that the alleged shooter was ISIS or an anarchist. I'm saying that there are components thereof that were interacting in this. There were multiple shooters, and of course, based on and I don't know whether you saw this. I think maybe it was in one of your videos. Paddock traveled from Vegas to Phoenix the week before and rented a car and drove back. Did you see that?
I did.
You know. The operation Fast and Furious and its predecessors, based out of Phoenix, basically. So, I mean, to me, there's a lot of suggestions here that would speak to something much, much larger, especially with the unanswered questions and the Undertaker, the FBI. Who was that? Aaron Rouse, the Undertaker?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Undertaker look back there, looking at the...
I saw a video today that you just that you said Undertaker, the coroner's office in Las Vegas is on lockdown, which is very strange. And I pulled up the Blackpilled YouTube video, and it's titled Entire Vegas Shooting Continuous Synced from Different Angles. And it does have the very end of the video is what we thought those last two shots come from. But one of the first comments on there is something John and I talked about last week. It's a system that over 80 plus cities as of 2011 had already installed called SpotShotter, or ShotSpotter, one of the two. And it puts these microphones all across the city and is able to triangulate and pinpoint, a location from where a gunshot comes from. And cities like Chicago, Miami, Florida, and Las Vegas have had these installed for years. And if you could see it would be interesting to be able to see the acoustical data, from those systems, because it should be able to pinpoint if there were, multiple gunshots, where they came from, and kind of give you a picture based on the technology that they use. But we don't see any of that either. We don't see the surveillance footage from the casinos. We don't see or hear the audio from the video they say they have of Paddock carrying out the attack, and I don't think we'll ever see that. And as you mentioned, the lawsuit that one of the victims of this incident won today was that the evidence not be destroyed by a judge. So it'll be interesting to see what, if anything, comes out from these lawsuits that we have. Very interesting to see that, if anything.
It's far from over. I mean, they've already deleted so much. They removed people from their system. They, who knows what they've done so far. The casinos in Vegas and the police force in Vegas are sadly, it can be beneficial or not. They're very tied together by money, by donations, etc.
Sure.
So, we've got that to work against as well. I can't let this go the wayside and like it's like 9/11 or any other operation like this that, has so many questions around it and it just kind of fades away and no one ever gets the truth. I mean, enough is enough with that already. I can't continue to be okay, like you were saying earlier, with it. There's no accountability for anything. And I think that the American people can handle the truth now. They're trying to suppress the CIA releasing the Kennedy assassination papers.
Yeah, for crying out loud. Seriously, Tracy, what is it, about 3,000 documents? They've had over 50 years to redact what they wanted and change what they want and whatever. But really? I mean, keeping that suppressed, what would be their motive? And I know we're kind of drifting now from Vegas to the CIA or JFK assassination. What would be the CIA's reasoning behind that, do you think?
Gosh, I don't know. I mean, why? Unless there's something that's comparable to today that people will find and be able to put two and two together. I mean, we're smart, we're resourceful, all of us. People are working on things and putting things together. And like I said, everything is connected. Everything is connected. So, you read a story or find a declassified CIA document on CIA.gov and you put it in your back pocket and 3 months later something happens in real time and you're like, whoa, I don't want to jump around to topics, but one of the things that I've researched quite a bit was the Montgomery leaks. And Montgomery.
Yes.
Yeah, and that story ties back into the Magnitsky Act and all kinds of things. And that's been going on since right after Edward Snowden. And it's coming back to fruition now. So massive. Donald Trump was mentioned back by Montgomery when he was doing these things. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the story.
And this is great because all of this really is tied together. Now you're talking about, I believe, Dennis Montgomery and the Mike Zullo interview. Is that, or?
Yes.
Okay.
It was actually Blixeth, who was a real estate mogul, and Dennis Montgomery was not there. Blixeth was in Arpaio's office in Arizona with Mike Zullo was in the room, and he came on behalf of Dennis Montgomery. And I don't believe that the audio was being recorded with anyone's permission. It didn't seem, it was like almost like it was being recorded without knowledge, and it was leaked out. And then subsequently, Mike Zullo met with Montgomery personally several times after that.
Okay, because I've downloaded the audio from that. I think there was only one place I found on the internet that had the audio. I downloaded that and I've got it on my hard drive. And if you want, we could take that in a number of different directions.
Yes.
For those who don't know, I think you did a pretty good job of explaining it, but the pure subject matter of that was what, for the people who don't really know what we're talking about, the Montgomery interviews.
Dennis Montgomery was a contractor for the government, CIA, NSA.
Right.
He started out innocuously enough fighting against terrorism, and they'd ask him to hack bank accounts and seize funds and things, and he'd do that. But it slowly started escalating to where he was basically spying on Americans, phone calls, bank transactions, credit card numbers, all kinds of personal information, social security numbers. They even had him go in and manipulate the voter rolls in Florida during the election, where that was a hot topic. The Florida voter, what the results were in Florida. He tried several times to, and he had a questionable background. So he's not clean as a whistle either. There are people that come out and say Montgomery, he's up to no good. He was a horrible guy. He did X, Y, and Z. But he had an aneurysm on his brain, and he was like, I'm going to die, so let me get the story out. He's still alive, I believe. Basically, he worked with Blixeth's ex-wife and had somehow managed to hack into Blixeth's computer and steal deposition information. And that's how Blixeth and Montgomery got together in the first place. He was partners with the wife who owned a consulting company that was contracted by the federal government to do this sort of work. He tried to come forward legally through the Whistleblower Protection Act and file legal whistleblower claims 20-something times and was just ignored every single time. Finally, he was like, enough is enough already. The people need to know about this. So he had Blixeth go to Arpaio because a lot of the folks that had been hacked were in Arpaio's district. There were a lot of high-profile names on that list, including Donald Trump. So the wiretapping claim ends up being pretty significantly, valid when you look back at what happened with Montgomery several years prior. So Fox News supposedly had the story. They had covered it for a week, as per Blixeth. They had actually filmed this for an entire week. They were going to go with it, just never aired the story, dropped the story. They actually call, and I can't remember the reporter's name off the top of my head. He just recently left Fox News. And they basically called him on this audio, which you can listen to, and called him while they were talking and asked him some questions about the reporting he was doing. They never aired the story. They never aired the report on what Dennis Montgomery had been doing. And it sat this entire time.
Pretty significant story in the scheme of things, and very topical and relevant for what we're talking about today. And again, all of this is related. And I think people might even be kind of tired, unfortunately, tired of hearing about the Russian collusion story. But that's still in the news too, and that's still kind of part of everything that we're seeing. That this the official narratives, what is your take on Russia, on the Russian collusion, not the Donald Trump alleged Russian collusion, but the Hillary and Bill Clinton, Clinton Foundation, Rosatom, Uranium One, that collusion? What do you think of that?
I think Uranium One is going to be talked about ad nauseum in the coming weeks. We've been screaming about it for a really long time. One of the things that I found that was really interesting in my research into this whole Donald Jr. meeting that he had with that Russian attorney, who, again, this is the Magnitsky Act. If you remember, Magnitsky was killed in a Russian prison. He kind of uncovered corruption. It was a massive sort of money laundering tax evasion scheme that went on and years ago. But it all ties into today because we're going to go a little off here, and I'm sorry I'm bouncing around. I'll get back to my point in a second. But Preet Bharara, who is the attorney general in New York, who Donald Trump asked to stay on board, You know, and then Jeff Sessions asked to resign, and he refused to resign. He was very heavily involved in the Magnitsky Act as well. So he was prosecuting that. Very interesting connection. The attorney that came over that wasn't supposed to be in the country, remember she had that visa that was revoked and then she wasn't supposed to be here?
Yep.
Okay. She was in the room with Don Jr. There was a translator in the room. That translator was also previously the translator for Hillary Clinton at the State Department.
Okay. Wow. I did not know that. And by the way, this was the meeting ostensibly where this Russian group was supposedly going to give Donald Trump Jr. information about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign that would help Donald Trump in the election, just for the backdrop of that.
Yeah, and then she was actually seen days after that meeting next to, you know, Obama, basically in the same room with Obama, just hanging out. You know, and so this guy, he works for this, I wish I had this, I'm so sorry, I'm not remembering names right now, but I have a video that I did on this. This gentleman who was the translator worked for the Meridian Foundation, which is based out of D.C. I believe he still works there. And everybody on the board there is a major Clinton donor, Clinton Foundation donor, proudly broadcasts their devotion to the Clinton family. So just the fact that that guy was in there with those connections and the Magnitsky Act ruled into it with Preet Bharara, who has made comments on several of the attorneys that Robert Mueller has brought on board to help him in the investigation into Russia, which I need to point out, we don't really know what he's investigating.
That's true.
So my speculation is it may not be what everybody thinks it is. It all ties together. That's what I was saying earlier. It really does tie together, every piece of this. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and amazing times in which we live. Regardless, though, however, if whatever Mueller is investigating, if it is what they say it is with respect to the alleged collusion with Russia, how can you have Mueller assemble a team of so-called investigators who have ties, financial ties, to the Clinton Foundation, the Clintons, and the DNC. And then you've got Rosenstein. Mueller himself, by the way, transporting 10 grams of uranium to Russia at the behest of Hillary Clinton. How does that work? Mueller is the director of the FBI back then, asked by Hillary Clinton to take 10 ounces or 10 grams of, or whatever it was, a vial of highly enriched uranium to Russia for a tarmac-type meeting, Shades of Phoenix. But anyway, this is just crazy.
I go with my gut a lot. I know, like, you guys as investigators have to do that, too. It's something that you have to do. You have to trust your instinct a lot of the time. It is so blatant and so overwhelmingly dirty. Those attorneys, those donors, those people, all of what you just mentioned. It can't be. It just can't be that they'd have to fabricate everything. And you know what I'm saying? I can't resign myself to the fact that they're actually, you know, Donald Trump's not going to scream conflict of interest if they're not investigating him.
That's a good point. Tristan, let me ask you this. I can't believe how quickly time has gone. You've been gracious with your time. You've given us an hour. Can you hang with us another segment?
Absolutely.
All right, because this is fascinating. I think we're getting into a lot of ground. People are really, you don't hear this in this fashion. This is kind of kitchen table talk. I like to think of it that way. Or conference table talk if you're in an office. Kind of working out these ideas. Really, we don't know. From open source, we really don't know what the hell went on in Vegas. We really don't know, what the heck went on in other areas, but we're talking it out. And people like Tracy Beans is, of course, on the forefront. And you've got Melissa Zachariah, the honeybee, as well. I always do that. I always mispronounce names as well, working on cases like this. And, of course, citizen journalists making a big difference. But we're almost up against the... Am I off on time? I am off on time. The program clock. I'm sorry. So I can either stretch it out, which I'm not going to do, or I guess we have another minute or so. So,
okay.
But I'm glad you're going to stay with us for another segment because this is fascinating. Joe, go ahead and help me, save me here, will you?
I'd be
okay.
You know, just popped up on Drudge here. We're starting to see some coverage of not only. You know, a lot of the stories are from the Hill pertaining to the Hillary Clinton and Russia case. And, Tracy, you said that you think that in the coming weeks we're going to see a lot of this coverage of the Uranium One deal?
Absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So what we're seeing in the mainstream media and in much of the alternative media, you think they're just holding off until this thing gets going?
But see, you've been talking about this. We've been talking about this for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know. We'll talk about that in a second, too.
All right. Folks, you're listening to the Hagmann Report on this, the 19th day of October, 2017, 18 days post Las Vegas. And, of course, man, time just goes fast. We're talking with Tracy Beans, a very popular internet channel, great investigative researcher, citizen journalist. And how am I doing on time? Again, I've got to get a better clock here. But we thank Tracy for joining us for, you know, riding with us for another segment. Folks, remember, right back. Network break right now, top of the hour. Stay with us.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, danielholdings.com. That's danielholdings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to danielholdings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagmann. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagmann takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmannandHagmann.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.